Greetings, everyone. It is now time for Marked Safe. Tales of your very favorite and most beloved disasters. On Marked Safe, we discuss events and details that some may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Please listen responsibly and stay safe. And now, here with your hosts, Brianne and Melanie, this is Marked Safe.
Well, we just spent a good 40 minutes with some audio issues.
Yeah, so now it is later than planned, but we don't need to talk about how to open this episode because you have had this planned for days.
Oh, my gosh.
Also, ambiance warning. We've had some major thunder here today, so sorry.
Ooh,
not sorry.
Me too. We're twinning.
Yay.
Yeah, so I've mentioned this before. Ava is in 4-H. She is doing archery for the first time ever. She absolutely loves it. When we first started out, there was a hunter's education camp that they had put on. But the way I read it, like, if she was at a certain age in December, like, there was a December cutoff to where they didn't need it.
Okay.
So wires got crossed and I did not send her to this camp.
Okay. How dare you?
Terrible. Terrible. So I find out a week before her competition, they have regional competitions, that she does in fact need Louisiana hunter's education. And this course is insane. She spent no less than 10 hours doing her online certification just so she could do this 5-hour field day, right?
I love how driven she is.
So driven. So driven. I mean, she did it in like 2.5 days, like we broke it up. That is a lot for a little kid.
Oh, hell yeah, it is.
Especially one that has no like hunting background whatsoever. Little girl just wants to fire off some arrows. Like, she doesn't want to learn about like gauges and calibers and
no
hunting animals. Like, she's such an animal lover. So she gets it done. Last minute, we find a place in Houma to get her signed up for the in-person field day. And we go. Brianne, this was the wildest experience ever. I wanted to take her really bad. Cody wasn't feeling well in the morning. He was exhausted from work. So I got to take her. I'm like, okay, is this going to be fun?
You manifested that, by the way.
I super manifested it.
Sorry about your exhaustion, Cody.
So we get there. It's at a gun range. We don't know where to go. It's not labeled. We finally find this guy in a golf cart. He unlocks a side door for us, right?
Oh, God.
And it is like a huge room, you know, like when like sheriff's departments like hold like press conferences and stuff. Like, it's got the stand and like the flags, and it's just this huge wide open space with a bunch of tables and chairs. So we sign her up, pick our spot, and we just wait. And there's like a couple older people there, and this woman that's running the field day, because the first portion of it is just like lessons. We're sitting there and there's 6 other kids with Ava, like all teenage boys. She's a 10-year-old little girl. We don't fit in, you know?
Oh my gosh.
Everybody's in hunting gear, like everybody. So we're sitting there and this lady goes up front and she opens it up with, "Who in here's been shot?"
Did you raise your hand?
No, but pretty much everybody else did. It was the first time I was so happy being left. It was the first time I did not feel bad being left out of something. And she was like, "Me too.
Oh my God.
Me too. I was shot right through the leg with a .357 or something like that. Clear through my leg. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a roller coaster. So that's how she opens it up. She introduces the lieutenant sheriff, and he comes in and he's kind of rocking back forth. He's very old. Like, I don't know if he's about to retire or has retired, but he starts rocking back and forth, and it looks like he's about to cry. And
don't cry at the hunting class, sir.
He's like, this is really sad. In all of my years doing this, this is the smallest class I've ever had. Hunters are going extinct, and you guys are the last chance.
Have they been overhunted?
No.
Hunters been hunted too long, and now they're approaching extinction?
I guess so. I don't know. But like, there's a deer problem apparently in Louisiana. And if we don't get out there and do something and do our part, we're responsible for the damage that all these deers are going to do.
Oh my God.
So Ava is clearly overwhelmed. Little lady gets back up there and starts the presentation off with what I describe as an after-school special about two kids with a .22 rifle and how most people say it's just a .22. It can't hurt you that bad. She was like, let me show you. This is a real case with serious, real repercussions. And the whole thing is like super 90s, like AOL, like talking to each other. Ava just doesn't get it. And then it cuts into like this kid falling down. His gun goes off. He shoots his best friend.
Oh my God.
They're slicing open this kid's stomach during surgery, showing all these guts and stuff. And Ava is like,
oh,
trying not to cry.
Like, oh my God, baby.
Traumatizing. So we get through that, and it's like, I can't explain it. It was super boring. She takes the test after hours and hours of just like all this type of stuff. Oh, I missed the most important part. Lieutenant Sheriff, in his speech about hunting and how hunters are going extinct, leans over Ava. I could not write this myself if I tried.
Oh, no.
Leans over Ava and says, so I'm going to need you to kill Bambi and his mom and his big ass daddy deer.
No.
He said big ass daddy deer.
Please, no. Oh.
To my 10-year-old.
I'm going to change your name to that in Messenger.
Big-ass daddy dear.
Big-ass daddy dear.
This poor girl.
No. I'm not laughing at Ava's misfortune, trust me. This is comedy. I'm sorry.
She's still Disney age. Like,
I know.
If he wanted to get a message across, he sure did.
Would he like to have some thoughts on Santa Claus, too, while he's here?
Oh, you know what? The Easter Bunny. Let's kill him, too.
Bunny overpopulation. Oh, my God.
But, yeah, so she got through
it. Not the big-ass daddy deer.
The big-ass daddy deer. They had a 50-question true or false test that they had to take to be able to go to, like, the gun portion of it. And, like I said, there were 6 other teenage boys. I don't know what their deal was, but Ava had the highest score in the class.
Okay. What a little... Hi, Barbie. What a badass.
Hi, Barbie, for sure. I guess they recently did renovations on the range and someone put sidewalks where they should not be, which is like, you don't need bullets ricocheting. So they didn't actually get to shoot guns, which... is good. Like, Ava had pumped herself up for it, but it was okay. Like, the day was traumatizing enough.
My God, I'm sure I'm surprised he didn't make him kill Bambi on the spot.
I know. But they had decoy guns so they could, like, show safe handling. And my poor kid, he hands her the .22. She does everything she's supposed to do. They're passing it around to the other students. But after that, he'd pull out like a big shotgun and he'd be like, baby girl, this is too heavy for you. So she literally like did not get to participate in most of that. Like he would like totally brushed her off. He would just be like, sorry, baby girl, this one's too big for you. So, yeah. But she passed.
That sounds like a masterclass in chaotic men.
Yes. But she has competition tomorrow. She's on the up and up. She has her little Hunter's Ed card. She did it. I'm proud of her. Big wow. ass.
Daddy. Big ass daddy dear.
Dear. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That everything about that was unhinged.
Yeah. So I don't want to take up too much more time because we are in a little bit of a danger zone for school. I have not done the bracket yet, but it will be posted by the time this drops. So make sure you guys fill them out. We are going to do sandwiches.
All right. Am I going to have to try the sandwich if I have? I mean, it's a sandwich. Like, how hard can it be? Are you going to put weird shit on there, though?
I am putting a hot dog on there.
Okay, that's fine. I don't care. But if you put some shit on there, like a squid sandwich, just to try to make me eat it, I don't know about you.
Oh, I'm not going to do that. I know your palate. I'm not going to be mean.
We'll see. We'll see. I need to bookmark that statement right there. I feel like that. I feel like I'm going to have to reference that later.
All right, so let's jump into it.
Let's do it.
All right, so this week I decided to pull one from my long list of to-dos. Like everyone else, my parents were absolutely glued to the media coverage of this. And I think about this one quite a bit, actually. We're going to talk about everybody's baby. Baby Jessica.
Baby Jessica.
Baby Jessica.
Yeah, I've been hoping you would do this. I don't know why I decided in my head that it was going to be you.
I love this story.
Me too. I want to hear your version of it.
I love actually deep diving it. I've heard it covered so many times, but it was good to kind of do it on my own terms.
Absolutely.
So Jessica was born March 26, 1986 to 18-year-old parents Reba Sissy and Louis Chip McClure. The McClures lived in the oil town of Midland, Texas. On October 14th, 1987, Sissy, who helped run a daycare at her sister Jamie's house, was in the backyard watching Jessica and four other children play that sunny afternoon. When the phone rang inside the home, Sissy went in to answer the call. Minutes later, she heard children screaming. Rushing outside, she noticed Jessica was gone and the other kids were standing around an abandoned well. Jessica had fallen down the well casing, its diameter only 8 inches. And I looked this up. The opening is about the size of a bowling ball, so it's not very big at all.
Wow, that's really not.
I wish I could have found a dinosaur, but I didn't want to spend too much time on it.
A bowling ball-sized dinosaur.
It would be so cute.
Oh, it would.
Now, there's differing accounts on this. The neighbor stated that the well, so the casing comes up about just like 3 inches from the ground, like okay. the tubing does. One of the neighbors said that the well was actually covered by like a flower pot. I don't know.
And maybe just, she like got curious and moved it.
I don't know. Okay. But Sissy, she has always stated that there was a large, heavy rock on top of that opening.
Okay.
To this day, it is still unclear how or who removed either the flower pot or the stone. Like, neither one's really found. So Sissy runs inside to call the police, which they show up in 3 minutes. That's like super fucking fast.
Yeah, it is.
Sissy said the 3 minutes it took for the police to arrive felt like a lifetime.
I bet.
Which, knowing this story, like, a lifetime in 3 minutes is nothing to compare to what's about to happen. BJ Hall was the first police officer to arrive, showing up to the home at the same time as the paramedics. He said, the mother met us at the front door of the house. She was very upset, but she was able to direct us to where the child was. She yelled, she's in the back. She fell down right here. Then she said, I can't let my baby die. I've got to get her out. I went over and looked down the hole, but I couldn't see anything. I called the baby's name 3 or 4 times and didn't hear anything. Finally, I got a cry in response. A long tube pumped oxygen into the well. Because it was so dark, the first responders, they had no idea how far down Jessica had fallen. Enter Big 2 News reporter Rodney Wunsch. Officer lowered Rodney's microphone into the well to better hear Jessica. And with the length of the cord, they were able to estimate that she had fallen down 22 feet. Oof. Which, they had better luck with their microphone in the 80s than we did this afternoon.
You're not wrong.
They don't make them the way they used to, huh?
Damn. There goes our Blue Yeti sponsorship.
So the city brought in a backhoe to start digging a parallel shaft. BJ said, we tore down fences. We tore down clotheslines, all kinds of things to get that equipment in.
Melanie, I'm so proud of you. You just said shaft and you didn't even.
There's so much shaft in this. It's my brain is.
You're desensitized to shafts.
Finally. It's only taken, what, 3 years?
I was going to say 5 kids, but okay.
Both can be right. So the back hole, there it is.
Maybe you think I'm taking that out. You're silly.
The backhoe proved to not be as helpful in rescue as the first responders had hoped. It only dug down about 2 to 3 feet deep before hitting rock. News of baby Jessica spread like wildfire, as we know, and the good folks of Midland did everything they could in help rescuing her. When the backhoe proved to make little progress, the firemen called for local help. Craig Robinson, Scott Fletcher, and Carrie Michelin were manning a rat hole rig a few miles away on highway construction work. So rat hole rigs are usually used to put in telephone poles. Okay. Oscar Robinson, the owner of Robinson Rat Hole of Midland and Kaysen Drilling, donated that equipment to help with the rescue. And soon, more donations started pouring into the site. Midland Police Sergeant Jeff Hale said, a lot of these people dropped off $1,200 drill bits and just walked off. They didn't even leave their names.
Wow.
Which I think is so cool.
I love details like that.
I have seen so much about this, but like just what the community did, like yeah, you don't hear.
I've never heard that detail.
A lot about it, yeah. Jimmy Cates, owner of Permian Reamer Manufacturing, parked a welding.
Wow. You took your maturity pills this morning.
I did.
And I think you took mine too.
So Jimmy, he parked a welding truck in the alley soon after the operation started. He said, we came here when they started drilling in the rock, thinking that they could use us. I guess we fixed almost 100 bits. So as the built bits are getting dull and broken, like they've got people just in the alleyway, like sharpening and fixing them. I thought that was so cool.
I love that. I've never heard those details.
As night fell, workers continued to drill the parallel shaft. Heaters were installed to blow warm air into the narrow entrance of the well during the night to keep her warm. They briefly considered sending her water, like a water bottle, down. Dr. Chip Klungnick, emergency room doctor at Midland Memorial Hospital, said, but then we thought, we don't want to fill her stomach if she has internal injuries or is going to require surgery when she comes out. She could have any kind of injuries down there. We just don't know.
Jesus.
The doctor said baby Jessica would have about 36 hours without water before things started getting dicey. Through the drilling process, first responders continued to talk to baby Jessica. Detective Andy Glasscock said, after listening to her for so long, I could tell her moods. At one point, she was singing. At another point, when the jackhammer started up, she didn't say any words, but kind of used a little huffy voice. You could tell it was an angry voice. I would say 80% of the time she was either crying or making some kind of noise we could hear. When we weren't calling out words of encouragement, we'd tell her to sing for us. I'll never forget her singing Winnie the Pooh. We'd say, "How does the kitten go?" And she'd respond to us. We'd promise her things like a Cadillac if she'd stop crying. I don't guess she'd try to collect on that one.
Oh, that's such a hard age because they do understand you, but they have no reasoning whatsoever.
I know.
It's not, you know, if it was a 4-year-old, you might be able to talk them through it a little bit more. But at that age,
it's just a little baby.
It's just raw emotion with a mild ability to communicate. That's a really almost the worst age for that, I feel like.
And she's 18 months. Like, most of my children were much older before they were, like, clearly communicating. Yeah. So, I don't know. It's impressive.
But they're not so young that there's no point in trying to communicate. Like, that's right. Worse. If it were, you know, a 2-month-old or something, you don't really need to do so much back and forth. You just need to get the baby out. But at that age, you know, there's emotional management that you may be able to do something about. Oh, God, that's so awful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Recognizing the complexity of the rescue mission, first responders knew that they were in over their heads, so they reached out to engineers, drilling experts, and emergency personnel from various parts of the country. Millionaire Midland oil man Clayton Williams Jr. sent a private plane to Carlsbad, New Mexico, to bring mining expert David Lilly to the site to advise the rescue workers on how to penetrate the final inches of rock.
Oh my God. Melanie. Woo! Man.
That was a mouthful, but I'm bump.
Oh. I'm not going to make it through this. This is not an episode for Ollie's dick jokes, damn it.
No, no.
But here we are, shafts and holes and penetrating. Mm-hmm. You're killing me.
So David would arrive the following morning. He actually came from a family of miners, and what would seem like a natural career choice, he became a special investigator with the U.S. Mine Safety and Health Administration, okay. Which is cool, right? Yeah. He knew his shit, and it only took about 10 minutes, talking to those that were in charge, for them to realize, like, he knew what he was doing. They needed to listen to him. He said, "When I arrived on the scene, the police chief and the fire chief were trying to organize the rescue, and it was total chaos. By the time I got there, they had already sunk a parallel shaft about 29 feet into the ground, 30 inches wide, and they were starting a horizontal drift towards the well that would have brought them right into where the girl was. That would have been disastrous because they would have to break the well in on her. So right away, I changed the angle of the horizontal drift so it would break through 2 feet below her. I made several changes in the way the work was being done. They'd been using some old 2-inch star-shaped bits that would wear down in just a few inches. Then they would take them up and sharpen them again. So I got in some bits that were made of tungsten carbide." So, like, he's getting shit done right away.
Oh, yeah.
And David was totally correct in describing the scene as chaotic. Around-the-clock coverage wasn't really a thing in the 80s. It wasn't until a year earlier, on January 28th, 1986, that the world experienced its first round-the-clock coverage.
I bet I know what it was.
Of a major news event. What was it?
Was it OJ?
No, 1986.
Really? 1986. I don't know when the fuck OJ was. That was before my time to care about.
90s.
What was it?
Okay, so a very little-known 24-hour news channel at the time called CNN... garnered national attention when classrooms around the country watched live the launch and subsequent explosion of the Challenger space shuttle.
I should have that was some disaster trivia I should have known.
Yeah, so that was the first major news, like 24-hour news media coverage of anything. Isn't that crazy?
It was OJ's trial or chase or something that, like, normalized that, or
The court, probably.
First. Something. Like, it definitely, I remember hearing that in a podcast, that it permanently changed something. I don't know. Anyway.
Anyway, yeah. So baby Jessica's rescue would be the second major news event following the Challenger, which was also covered by CNN, and it was around the clock. New technology, such as satellite trucks and remote cameras, made constant live coverage possible from the scene of Jessica's rescue. Managing editor Ernie Williamson said of the media coverage, By the next day, news vans lined the Midland streets and reporters slept on couches in local homes in order to stay close to the action. Journalists were separated from the drilling scene by a fence, so they brought ladders. The taller the ladder, the better the angle. I remember our photographer telling me he was afraid to leave his spot in the backyard to go to the bathroom or get something to eat. He feared missing the rescue and worried that another photographer would grab his spot. You imagine, like, you just don't know when it's going to happen.
No, or what's going to happen for sure.
Despite their anticipation and their full bladders, journalists would not be reporting on Jessica's rescue as night fell once again on the operation. The hard stone and difficult drilling angle slowed progress to an agonizing pace. So now they're like, they're digging at a rate of 4 inches per hour. Wow. At some points, it was only an inch. Aria was asking me what I was working on this week. So I was giving her like the kid friendly rundown of this. And her brain immediately went into Minecraft mode. And it was so cute. She was like, I wonder if they hit bedrock. That stuff she was like, that stuff is unbreakable in survival mode. Did you know that, Mom? Did you know that?
Oh, kids.
I did not know that. I did not know it was unbreakable. but that's what happened. They had hit bedrock. So that's what happened. They hit bedrock. She was right. I was very impressed with her. See? Video games don't rot your brain.
Not at all. She's so smart.
Yeah, I love her.
Your babies are all so smart. I wonder where they got it. Your brilliant ass.
Their daddy. Their big daddy. Big ass daddy dear.
My bad. You're so right. They obviously got that only from big ass daddy dear.
So by the next morning on October 16th, workers continued to dig upwards at a 30-degree angle. A 63-inch horizontal tunnel between the well and the 26-foot parallel shaft they created. The sheer amount of endurance and strength for this portion of the dig, it blows my fucking mind. So workers are literally, they're on their tummies holding 35 to 90-pound pneumatic drills, and they're drilling at an upward angle. Like, they're laying down holding these massive drills.
That had to like wreck their shoulders.
Oh my gosh. Like, I can't even imagine. They finally broke about 12 inches below the spot where Jessica was stuck, 20 feet below the surface. By 10:40 a.m., they could see her by holding a mirror into the shaft. By 12:30 that afternoon, Jessica's mother, Sissy, was brought to the edge of the police barricade about 15 feet from the hole. It was time. Baby Jessica was going to be rescued. There was no shortage of people volunteering to bring her up. This included a roofing contractor named Ron Short, who had been born without a collarbone, and he could collapse his shoulders to work in confined spaces.
Are you kidding me?
No. This man was.
I swear to God, I have heard this story on probably 4 or 5 different podcasts, and I never knew that detail.
This man was like, God makes no mistakes. This is my fucking moment.
Holy shit.
I love that so much.
Me too.
Ultimately, though, it was decided that since her injuries were unknown, that it would be best practice for a paramedic to bring Jessica up. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ron. I still believe in you. I think that was amazing. Me too. Journalists held their breath as a paramedic carrying a backboard was lowered into the shaft, but he returned above ground shortly after alone. The paramedic was able to poke his head and one arm into the shaft and was able to touch Jessica. He reported that he could see only one of her legs and that she giggled at the touch of his hand. Her position in the well would be yet another obstacle in her rescue. She had fallen in such a way that her right foot was suspended above her head and her left leg dangled below her. So she's in the splits.
That has to hurt so bad.
A larger new opening was needed so they could reach up and free Jessica's other leg. I cannot imagine as a mother, like, it's in the morning, you're finally getting your baby out, and it's like, no, it's it's going to be longer.
Yeah. Also, can I just say, real quick sidebar, as a mother, can you imagine going through this and then as soon as it's over, everybody's calling your baby everybody's baby?
That's my baby.
I don't know how I'd feel about that.
I don't know how I feel about that either.
I think I would probably have some maturity about it now, but 5 years ago, I don't know if I would have.
I never even thought of it that way. That is such an excellent point. Because now that you mention it, I don't know if I'd like it.
This is such an odd connection, but after my coma, I felt like people were almost proprietary about my coma because I woke up and everybody's like, oh, this thing happened to us. This terrible thing happened to us. And I'm like, bro, I don't have any fine motor skills and I can't see my baby. Shut the fuck up. go deal with your trauma, but not in my hospital room. Stop it.
Yes. No, that makes sense.
And I'm just like, I think I would feel some type of way.
You are everybody's Brienne.
Oh, fuck me. Face, I just said that caused a visceral reaction. Because weirdly, it did feel that way and I didn't like it.
Noted. So if anything shall ever happen to you again.
No, but like your kid has this horrible near-death experience and you're, you know, for hours and hours and hours watching your baby's life flash before your eyes and then the whole world's like, that's our baby. Fuck you.
Yeah. Fuck you. Like, it. Yeah. Are you going to take this trauma too?
Right. That's your news story. Stop it.
Yes.
Okay.
So they weren't able to get her out. At 3:30 p.m., workers switched to high-powered water drills, hoping it would speed up the process.
What the fuck is a water drill? I'm not even being anything. I'm just curious. I've never heard of it.
I imagine it wets it so it's easier to cut.
Oh, I'm Googling it. I need to know what a water drill is. I'm sorry. We probably don't have time for this. But I want to know.
I've seen like the water like saws.
Oh, damn. For, like, that's tile big and as stuff. Hell. Okay. Yeah. I got to fall down some water drill rabbit holes later.
I bet there's an episode in there.
Probably a few.
So with the water drill, the workers were able to expand the horizontal tunnel from 12 by 18 inches to 24 by 36 inches. They also inserted two industrial balloons beneath her to keep her from falling further, like, into the shaft.
What are industrial balloons? I mean, I can immediately see the utility, but I've never heard the words industrial balloons in my life, and I am once again very curious.
I'm sure it's got to be, like, of a thicker fabric. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're not, like... Could you imagine if they were like little helium balloons and then after the rescue, they're all like.
I'm definitely picturing them matte black.
With like their little helium voices. Everybody's baby.
Yes. So I do feel like I intuitively understand the role of industrial balloons, but I am fascinated. Continue.
At 7 p.m., Jessica's parents were once again brought to the well. Another attempt to bring Jessica up was happening. Paramedic Robert O'Donnell inched his way through the tunnel. He used Vaseline to ease Jessica through the narrow hole feet first. Robert strapped her to a board and pulled her through the 3-foot-wide parallel shaft and onto a rescue capsule, a custom-made metal cage. Baby Jessica, held by another paramedic, Steve Forbes, was pulled by crane and cable to the surface to a flurry of camera flashes and an eruption of cheers. At 8 p.m., and after 58 hours trapped in the well, baby Jessica, caked with dirt and strapped with gauze to a backboard, was alive but in critical condition.
Mm.
I don't think I realized, like, how bad of shape she actually was in. I think, like, the actual rescue just kind of, like, overshadowed.
Right, me too. I don't feel like I have much of a concept of what condition she came out of there in.
Yeah, like, I saw at one point, like, she had bald spots on her head from where she was, like, twirling her hair.
Oh and, my like, God, pulling that hurts it out. My mom heart real bad.
And I found that in, you know, one of the old news coverages on newspapers.com. And it's just, you know, little bloody bald spots because she was just, it was probably anxiety, you know, like.
And she had to be in so much pain with her legs like that.
Yeah. 3.1 million households watched the final moments of her rescue on CNN. as she was whisked away immediately by emergency personnel. At the hospital, baby Jessica was put into a hyperbaric chamber, a pressurized oxygen tank used to increase the amount of oxygen in the blood. This is a good thing. Obviously, they're doctors. I'm not a doctor. I just can't wrap my head around the feeling that this baby was removed from one tube and put in another. And I know they're wildly different, but it's still like she's encased in another thing. It's just that's where my head went.
That had to be so hard for her parents to see. I mean, you just want to hold your baby after that.
Yeah.
Sorry, you just want to hold everybody's baby after that.
She was also fed intravenously. Am I saying that right? Intravenously? Because she was without food and water for 58 hours.
Yeah.
Her first solid food. I cannot believe I found this. Her first solid food afterwards was an orange popsicle.
Oh. And
I think that detail, like, it might be insignificant to some people, but as a mom, kids love popsicles.
Yes.
Like, that is like the perfect first meal. So many times you talk about last meals, we never talk about first meals.
Right. Well, we did in the cave rescue episode, but yes.
I don't know. Kiddos love a popsicle. And orange is the best. That's Abby's favorite, too.
I like an orange creamsicle.
Mmm. I haven't had one of those in years.
I haven't really either, but now I want to.
I know what I'm doing after this. So Jessica suffered some scrapes, cuts, bruises, none so severe that she needed stitches right away. Doctors did worry about her hip strain with her being in the splits for so long. Most importantly to them, in when they were first reporting this, was she had a moist blister on her right foot, and they were worried that it would turn into gangrene. And it did.
Oh, no.
She would undergo surgery and would ultimately have her pinky toe amputated.
Oh, poor baby.
Mm-hmm. She also suffered a head injury where the cramped space of the well had put pressure on her forehead. They likened this to, like, a bed sore. But she would have to undergo like a plastic surgery for this as well to fix this the situation.
Yeah.
In total, she would have 15 surgeries following the whole ordeal, where they would go back and remove a portion of that right foot. The media continued to cover the miraculous rescue of baby Jessica. A photograph of baby Jessica's rescue by Scott Shaw of the Odessa American received the 1988 Pulitzer Prize for spot news photography. Despite the intense media attention, Jessica's parents fiercely protected her privacy and tried to give her as much of a normal life out of the spotlight as they could, you know?
Yeah.
I saw in one article that she didn't even learn about her rescue. Because she was a baby, but she didn't learn about it until she was 5 years old and saw an episode of Rescue 911 recounting it, which is cool and all. But then I saw an interview with her dad. There was a lot of people reporting, like, this is how she found out, like, she was baby Jessica.
Yeah.
I did find an interview with her father, Chip, saying that, yeah, that's not what happened. He said Jessica grew up knowing about her trust and being involved in the media decisions. Statements like that make good TV and help promote other shows. I'm sure it originated with a comment, but was taken out of context. It's like saying, when did you set the kids down and tell them daddy was the president? The kids don't have to be told. They just grow up with it. It's all about how it is lived, the attitude of the parents. With Jessica, we never made it a big deal, so it wasn't a big deal. This allowed her to have a good attitude about life and her position in it.
Aww.
So it wasn't like they kept it from her. It's just like,
it just wasn't the focus of everything.
It's not your dinner table topic every night, you know?
Right, which it shouldn't be.
Speaking of her trust, donations for her poured in from across the world. It says upwards to $1.2 million was placed in that trust for Jessica But when the stock market crashed in 2008, a significant amount of it was wiped out before she gained access to it on her 25th birthday. She married, she became a mother herself, and used some of the money from the trust to purchase a family home and set up education funds for her own kiddos. Jessica's rescue, like we've mentioned 1,000 times in this, widely covered. Obviously, there was a couple things that happened afterwards that has been covered. It needs to be a part of this. There's a lot of speculation on some of it. I personally think some of the way it's been covered is icky, so I'm going to try to maybe navigate it a little differently. I don't know. The rumor mill worked overtime when Jessica's parents divorced. There was a lot of really disgusting theories. I'm not going to repeat them. Sissy and Chip, as we've seen, they try to their best to keep their family life private. They didn't come out and initially speak about their divorce, but they married when Sissy was 16 and Chip was 17.
Yeah.
Right. Which.
That's an uphill battle, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, maybe an uphill battle is not the right thing, but there's some stuff stacked against you.
Mm-hmm. Chip said that the age part definitely played a role in their divorce, and not like the notoriety that came from baby Jessica's rescue. He said about being in the public eye that, quote, it didn't contribute to the breakup. It probably extended the marriage. The fact is, we were both children when we met. We were not in love. I wish this had been a storybook in that sense, but it wasn't.
Aww.
They were
very pragmatic, though.
Yeah. In April of 1995, the story of baby Jessica was in the spotlight again after the death of the man who rescued her. Paramedic Robert O'Donnell died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, leaving many to speculate that he suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder following Jessica's rescues. Others close to him said that there were some other things going on in his life that played a factor in his death. I'm not here to speculate either way, but I do think it's important to note that suicide is one of the leading causes of death amongst first responders.
Yeah.
The coverage of Robert O'Donnell, I don't know. I think it's good awareness, but the way it is done with him tied to Jessica's story.
Yeah.
And just the speculation, I don't know. If he was my family member, I would be pissed.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. End of story.
I can see that.
Again, Jessica made headlines when Andrew Glasscock, the one who stayed by the well that was talking to Jessica, he had a massive, massive fall from grace. On Christmas Eve in 2003, Andrew was arrested after a female acquaintance reported that she had been drugged and raped by him.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Additionally, while executing the search warrant, authorities found internet child pornography, videotape of a 12-year-old girl undressing in his bathroom, and over 400 pounds of explosives in a closet.
Wow.
Yeah. After pleading guilty, he received 2 concurrent 20-year sentences in federal prison for sexual assault, sexually exploiting a child, and improperly storing explosives. He died on July 10th, 2016, and may he rest in hell.
May he never rest.
Much better. Mess better. Today, Jessica continues to live a quiet life with her family. She doesn't really speak to the media still, but you brought this up a bit earlier, and I'm so glad you did. I found an absolutely odd interview with her that I wanted to close this with. And I say odd, not because of anything she said, but for the simple fact that a reporter contacted her about this.
Okay.
Disaster related. You covered it. Common denominator is that both of these were covered around the clock. Or in 2018, the world watched the rescue of the boys' soccer team in Thailand.
Yep.
Well, the New York Times really wanted Jessica's thoughts on this. So they just called her out of the blue.
Oh.
To ask her what she thought about this rescue. It reads in part, "So what did baby Jessica, who drew saturation coverage in 1987 when she fell down a well in Texas and remained wedged there for 58 and a half agonizing hours, think of this daring rescue mission halfway around the world?" "I didn't know about it at all," said Jessica McClure Morales.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I love that response.
Me too.
I don't even know him. Oh, I don't know this man. Okay.
I don't know this man. Said Jessica, who learned of the ordeal in Thailand from a New York Times reporter on Tuesday. "We live in the country and we're pretty unplugged." She goes on to say, "Our internet's very spotty and we're not willing to pay for cable because it's too expensive." I fucking love her.
Oh my God.
Despite Jessica having zero idea about the soccer team's rescue, the Times still managed to write a whole ass article, like a whole article about her response and her. I get the vibe she was caught off guard, like someone called her and she was trying to be polite. Right. You know what I mean? Like I said, her interviews are very, very rare. Anyways, the article closes with Jessica's response to holding your children closer. She said, "I hope that's how people feel when they listen to and read about the Thailand boys. I hope they hold their kids a little tighter, and I hope they hold them a little longer. Things can change and happen on a dime."
Oh.
So that's the baby Jessica story.
You did fucking amazing with that, and I know how intimidating episodes that have been heavily covered are.
Yeah.
At least they are to me.
So yeah, I really enjoyed that.
I just loved every minute of that.
And I could, the drilling thing just gets me, the claustrophobia.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. No. I'd be like, fuck that baby. No, just kidding.
Then you fucking wouldn't. Oh, wow.
I'd be sitting on the sidelines eating her popsicles.
Oh.
I'd be the villain of this story.
I know. You're the villain of every story.
I'm just kidding. No, it's an incredible story.
Yeah. It really is.
I really love that. Like, I don't know. Like, it could have gone, and it has. There are times where there's been similar situations to this where it didn't turn out.
Oh yeah, for sure.
No, no,
for sad sure. Chat.
All right, you ready for some disaster relief?
Absolutely. I will go first since it was your episode. I think that I have mentioned this guy before, at least in the context of the orcas and the yachts, but I'm not sure that he was my disaster relief. If not, he's going to be again. Josh Johnson shaping up to be one of my favorite comedians, and I really love stand-up. He's doing a lot of videos that cover current events in a very, very funny way, which is relevant to me.
You know, I think he's a horrible ghoul.
He is. He is a horrible ghoul at heart, and he's also a stand-up comedian, and he seems like a really chill dude. He's just so fucking good. I have never seen a bit of his that wasn't funny. I just sent you one yesterday. He did, a bit about the guy who jumped in the tank at, Bass Pro Shops, naked and then kicked an officer in a dick. All this stuff happened. And it's hilarious.
Living my dreams.
Yeah. He comes up on my TikTok. He doesn't miss. So I would highly recommend Josh Johnson Comedy. That's his TikTok handle. I don't know where else you can find him if he ever comes here. I would certainly love to see him live. But yeah, excellent comedian.
Perfect. I'm just going to go back to the beginning with mine and keep it short and sweet. Ava has her regional competition for archery tomorrow, and I am so proud of her, not only for the Hunter's Ed, but there was a last minute snafu when she had practice on Saturday and we received her registration. She we thought she was registered for, like, you know, the old school targets, the little circle things. Mm-hmm. Apparently, they registered her for 3D hunting. So she actually has to shoot animal forms, which, if you know my kid, is not cool. The coach, when we found out the 2-hour practice was over. She's never done this sport, this event in her life. And the coach stayed after 30 minutes for her, walked her through it, got her comfortable, basically was like, you know, these aren't real. You never have to do this. She went up and got to hug the bear and stuff. He was just very tender with her. I'm just really proud because she's been given a lot of obstacles these past couple weeks, and she's just chinned up. She's pulled it up by the bootstraps.
Hell yes, she has. Sound like a boomer, but that's okay this one time.
So, yeah, tomorrow we have a 2-hour drive. She gets to miss school. Well, we're taking all the kids out of school tomorrow. So I hope she does good. I hope she has fun. I don't give a shit if she hits one or not. I just want her to have a good time.
I love her.
Ava, if you ever listen to this in the future, I'm rooting for you.
I wonder if our kids will.
That would be cool, huh?
I don't know. I got to go get mine from school now, though.
All right. Well, on that note, sweet dreams or no dreams?
Sweet dreams or no dreams.
Hey, Horrible Ghouls. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your personal MarkSafe moment, you can send it to us at MarkSafePodcast@gmail.com. Please give our podcast a rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your buddies about us, too. That goes a long way. If you want to further elevate your support, check out our MarkSafe Patreon page, where we have shoutouts, goodies, and some bonus content in the works. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks again, and as always, stay safe.